pay, and I'm not getting a return from the studio, so I'm not sure if we're back like this, because we did have to transition here on some electricity. One short coming out here is the solo. There's one plug for everybody. And Thursdays, you know, the kids from Hofstra, right? I think it's the Hofstra crowd comes out here.
Yeah, I right? do believe so. You're correct.
Joe Longo joining us, and of course, you know, Joe, we've been talking to Joe Longo for years and years and years. And here's Rich Migliori to come sit around on the other side. There we go. Everybody filling in. Yeah, take the stick, Mike. There you go. Mig going left-handed with the stick, Mike.
How you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. How was Fox and Friends?
It was good. Everybody was friendly. Fox and friendly. But talked a little Belmont. It kind of blew up on me that we canceled racing today because I came down yesterday just because it's easier to get into the city from here. You know, they sent a car for me. But if I didn't know we were canceling, I would have just taken the train and then taken the train back home. But now it's a good day to spend with my granddaughter, Isabella.
Nice. Yeah. There you go. This was... you know, for a lot of us, we can adjust quite easily. But Joe, for those that you know that have to handle things like the mechanics and the downline, what do you call that? The dealings? Is there a term for the dealings with the simulcast teams?
I mean, at least for us, it's in terms of just a content agent buying and selling content here, and then you know for others as well. So in terms of distribution of this information, yeah, it'd just be simulcast downstream.
There you go. Well, there were a few things about that. This card had 1 2-day wager that's going to go by the wayside.
Yeah, unfortunately, the 2-day pick four, that's going to go away. That would have started today. We were trying to bring it back and, you know, put Thursday into the spotlight. But with the actual cancellation, that's going to go away. But there's... Believe me when I tell you there's plenty more here, which everyone seems to like to give me jabs about, but I do think it adds a lot to the weekend here.
Let's talk about the weekend and dive through the highlights and, you know, particularly, you know, some of the decision-making, Joe, that went on in terms of, you know, I have this discussion, I had it with Pete Rotundo, I had it with Gary Palmisano, you know, Derby and Preakness. Talk about the picking and choosing, the pruning, and you know the way the menu comes about for a 2-day of racing like this.
So in terms of the separate card wagers, a number of these have been doing for a couple years now. In particular, the Met Mile in the New York, as well as the Gold Cup, the Belmont Stakes, been going on for a couple years. Several years back, we started adding the Philly and the Mare Double, the Sprint, and then last year the Met Mile Belmont Stakes Double. Again, it just helps tie in the days. Quite frankly, the one major change with that this year is it's going to be a $5 base. We looked at the actual base bet. The average last year was over $5, so you're already seeing that with what the players want. And then similar with the you know, the triple play in terms of the all turf sequences, people seem to really enjoy that. The 2-day pick six, you know, 20-cent base with that field size, I think it's certainly going to help a little bit there. You know, these are retail only, so certainly something more for the everyday player.
Excellent. All right, let's walk through. Let me pull out the Friday and Saturday. I use the, for those that have never seen them, and a lot of people aren't even aware because the Daily Racing Form doesn't really advertise them, but Kenny Peck, several years ago, created these Daily Racing Form quick sheets.
Right.
And for our purposes, for, you know, for keeping track of stuff and staying organized.
You mean like, for television and radio.
Yes, exactly.
I'm kidding. I just love the way the verbiage you use there with the menu and like the way you explain it. Like I'm thinking like farm to table here, very organic. How we, you know, which races we're going to use in these sequences.
you give this guy a day off, and he's just.
You see how much more relaxed I am.
Look at you. He grabs the bit and off he goes. He's a runaway right away. Here
Andy
we go.
Andy was his normal, charming self. this morning?
Oh, he was dirty. I knew because he was shooting me one-liners, texts for 20 minutes before the appearance.
Can I do this? I got to run down to the truck. You mind if I step out? Let you guys.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Then I'll
you'll come right
back.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Come back. Go to the truck.
See you in a bit, Richie.
There goes Rich. And bring anybody back you want.
Okay. If I see someone.
Well, I'd like to get Amos. I'd like to get Famous.
I don't know who's here. Let me go to the truck.
All right. There we go. All right. I'm telling you, I knew right away when he was going to have the day off that it was going to be fun. Andy too. All right, so where are we starting on the Friday card?
I think we should really start with the doubles right from the top there. So again, these are all $5 base bets. It's our standard takeouts, 18.5%. The first one, the New York Met Mile double. The first leg there is going to be race 8 at 4:41, the New York on tomorrow, Friday. And the Met Mile tomorrow, race 10 at 5:04. That's the New York Met Mile. Looks like we have 8 in the New York and 9 in the Met Mile there. The following race, the Gold Cup, would actually came up pretty well. There's 13 in there. That's going to start the Gold Cup Belmont Stakes double. So that's the Gold Cup tomorrow, race 10 at 5:47. And then Saturday, it's going to end on the Belmont Stakes, race 12 at 7:02. The Philly and Mare double is going to start tomorrow, race 9 at 5:14 with the Acorn. And it's going to wrap up on Saturday, race 7 with the Ogden Phipps. That's 3:02. The sprint double is going to be the Intercontinental tomorrow, race 11 at 6:19. And we'll wrap up with the Woody Stevens race 8 tomorrow at 3:42. And then this isn't a two-day double. It's a same-day double, the Met Mile and the Belmont Stakes. Met Mile race 10 at 5:04, and then the Belmont Stakes race 12 at 7:02. So that'll cover the doubles for the separate cards.
Let's pause for a minute because, Joe, in your experience and in how many years now, by the way, since you left Arizona?
This will actually coming up on 6 years in about a week. It's hard to believe.
There you go. In the time, and it really is, that's about the right period of time that we've seen this call from the serious playing community to up the increments. And some of it, the first murmurs of it came out of Breeders' Cup and the player committee there with Paul Matisse and Chris Larmy. And the origins of increased increment actually goes back to the Santa Anita focus groups that produced the Super High Five, because displaced Superfecta bettors complained that by going to 10 cents, they had sapped all the value for serious Superfecta players that would occasionally get Superfecta carryovers, and so they were unhappy, and that's how the Super High Five was born out of that, and that was really the first inkling that there was a movement. The pendulum was swinging back away from the lower increment, the 50 cent. Talk about your experience with it, your analysis of it, $5 doubles and what it does to the pools, what it does to the, you know, to the payouts. Explain the benefit and feature.
You know, so when you're lowering the base bets like that, and then you couple that with the decrease in field size we've had over the last several years, it really is going to impact your payouts. And that's really what we've been noticing. When you're actually looking into the data behind the wagers, a lot of the base bets are much higher than what the minimums are to begin with. So really looking at this, it's been well received. The pools have all been very healthy. And that's the reason for doing this separate pool. And look, to be fair, it's also one of those, it's almost, you want to call it the farm system, so to speak, depending on how well this does, can, you know, help us look at it going forward.
The pool size, what are the goals?
It's not so much goals. You know, we look at a lot of this more from an engagement standpoint than a revenue standpoint. They're still healthy. A lot of the two-day doubles are anywhere from 100,000 to 250, depending on which one it is. You know, the two-day pick four and the pick six are between 300,000 and 400,000, which has been in the past. With this field size that we're having, and hats off to the racing office, they did a great
terrific
job.
Super.
I mean, between the 3 days, you're looking at, you know, removed today, but tomorrow it's about 9.5 average field size. Same thing, Saturday's 10. You know, you've got 130 in the body of the races there. So I do believe that this is going to outperform what we've done the last several years.
Outstanding. So there's the doubles, and to go over them again, the eighth race tomorrow, the New York/Met double. That is Friday 8 with Saturday 10. The Philly and Mare dirt event, the Acorn, Friday 9 with the Phipps, Saturday 7. Then the Gold Cup / Belmont, so that's Friday 10, Saturday 12, and the Sprint Double, which is kind of cool, the Intercontinental, Friday 11 with Saturday 9. Those are just the doubles, but we've also got the bigger multis.
Yeah, that Sprint Double would end with the Woody Stevens, which should be race 8.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking, I'm sorry. You're right. I was thinking turf.
Are you thinking the Jiper?
Yes, I was. So make it the 8th. And by the way, today in hour 3 when we do our Thoroughgraph visit, we're going to be doing the Woody and the Met is the Thoroughgraph. And the seminar that Jerry Brown is offering for everybody as a thank you for helping work through the website crash from the West Coast. Jerry has given an analysis of the Phipps, the Met, and the Belmont. So really, the only thing missing from that pick 6 would be the Jiper. So might help you to, between Jerry's 3 races and the 2 that Jeff Franklin and I do, that's 5 of the 6, and then you make your play in the Jiper. All right, back to Joe Longo.
Yep, so that we have two triple plays. They're all turf in here, taking a page out of our good friend Jim Goodman's book over there at Keeneland. On Friday, you have the 3 graded stakes, the Just a Game, race 4 at 228, the Belmont Gold Cup, race 10 at 547, the Intercontinental, race 11 at 619. That is a $3 base, 19% takeout, similar on Saturday. It's going to be the all graded turf stakes there as well. So that'll kick off with the Poker, race 5 at 144. Jiper, race 9 at 419, and then the Manhattan, race 11 at 554.
Yeah, the triple play it may get kind of lost in the translation here, right? I mean, it's back for second year, or
we had it all last year, and then we had put it on pause. We had that little hiccup. Yeah, down at Saratoga. So now, I mean, I think using it on these bigger days here certainly is worthwhile. And then lastly, you have the 2-day pick 6. That's 20-cent base, 15% takeout. And that's going to be using the Acorn and Gold Cup on Friday, so races 9 and 10. And then heading into the body on Saturday, Jiper, race 9, Met Mile 10, Manhattan 11, and the Belmont Stakes, race 12.
Run that down for everybody again.
Sure. It starts race 9, 514 with the Acorn. Then the second leg is race 10, the Belmont Gold Cup. Races 9, 10, 11, and 12 on Saturday. So Jiper, Met Mile, Manhattan, and Belmont Stakes.
There it is. That's your 2-day pick 6. And is that that's a force out?
Mandatory force out. In addition to, we're also going to be having mandatory force outs on all the middle pick 5s, as has been the case for a while now.
Yes, and the middle pick 5, tomorrow, the middle pick 5 starts with race 4, so races 4 through 8. That's the Just a Game, the starter allowance, the second level allowance going short on the dirt, then the state bred turf race as the 7th, and then it ends with the New York. And those have been... those have been very good. Last summer I had a tough Saratoga, but the 2 decent scores of the entire summer came in those mandatory mid-card pick 5s.
Yeah, sometimes you just need one or two.
Well, and what's interesting is that because they are, and this is a little bit different with these cards, but because they incorporate... typically, let's say race 3-4 or 4-5-6, you know, the tail end of the early pick 5, very frequently it's a little bit smaller field. There might be 6 horse field in there, a 7 horse field, so you can maybe tiptoe. I mean, if you got clear ideas, it's not as taxing as for instance the all stakes pick 5s, certainly on Saturday. This all stake pick 5, I mean, you know, you could blow your whole bankroll for the weekend on it.
Yeah, it'll be tough. And look, quite frankly, you could have a strong opinion in a 13-horse field or in a 4-horse field, right? But
that's
generally
that's
the idea
true.
With any of these wagers. There's a number of them. I mean, on Saturday we have 5 pick 4s and 3 pick 5s. You know, you can leverage an opinion and gives you a chance to wrap it into a number of different things.
There's also an additional – there isn't there a – there's the mandatory pick 5 on – Saturday actually starts with the Woody, right?
That one starts in race 8.
Race 8 through the Belmont. And then is there a pick 5 that ends with the 13th? No.
So there is race 9 is going to start the late pick 5. And it's also because of the placement of the Belmont Stakes.
Oh, I see it. There it is.
Traditionally, Belmont Stakes in the last several years, we've had it as race 11 of 13. With it being race 12, just keep in mind, race 9, we're going to have the late pick 5 that's going to end on race 13, and then we're also going to have the pick 4 that's going to end on the Belmont Stakes starting on that race as well.
Is there a final pick 4, races 10 through 13? There is.
There sure is.
Yep.
So you're going to have that starting in race 10. So you got the 3 pick 5s, you got 5 pick 4s there.
Wow. All right. And the triple play.
Correct.
The triple play on Saturday is
starts in race 5.
It starts with the poker, goes to the Jiper, and ends with the Manhattan.
Yep.
That's a fun – I'll tell you what. Do you have the pool sizes from last year at Ant?
For which races?
For things like those, like the Turf Triple or the
I do, actually. So we had the triple play last year was about $170,000.
Okay. What do we know what it paid?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay. I can pull that up actually off of last year's. That's usually in my notebook. Okay. Wow. This is
there's something for everybody.
Wow.
I also would like to do a shameless plug for Naira Bets. We have plenty of promos between the 2 days on new customers, $200 deposit match, $25 free bet. On Friday, there's a $5,000 hit and split on the late pick 5. I believe there's also an early bird bonus on the first 5 races, depending on how much you wager. Then Saturday, we're doing a $31,000 hit and split between several different pools. So I encourage everyone to check out that offers page, sign up, you know, play
Absolutely.
A role this weekend.
Absolutely. These kind of weekends always the best opportunity. Joe Longo with us as we touch on the deep and compelling wagering menus. And
it's going to be really great. Well, you know, weather in terms of temperature is going to be nice.
Be,
you know, you're talking
mid-70s. It's going to be just like this.
Yeah,
it's
perfect.
I'm not going to belie the decision. I think we all understand why the decision was what it was. Because you just have these right now, every single thing that we do as an industry has to be prudent, pure and simple.
Understandably so. I will say, though, everyone keep an eye out for the Sunday card we draw today. I would imagine the stakes from today will be brought back Sunday. It should be, you know, bringing those two back with the two that are in the book now, 4 stakes. Sunday's going to wind up being a nice card.
Very much. And actually won't be able to participate because we're going to a show. But
where are you going?
We're at the Prima Facie with Jody Comer.
Which, oh, nice.
My brother is the press agent, and this thing was a monster hit for her in London, and it's a limited run, 6 weeks. So it was Tina and I always, whether it's the Bronx Zoo, a show, or a Yankees or Mets game, the Sunday after is always there's an activity.
Yeah, Bronx Zoo is great. I've probably been there 100 times as a kid.
We love the zoo. We bring Spencer and his roommates over the years, and I also as a kid, I famously lost a teddy bear as a toddler or something, and my parents never let me forget this, and we subsequently apparently spent, you know, 2 hours with me screaming because my teddy bear was gone, and eventually we did find it. Apparently,
years later, it's still with you.
The only thing that this is a true story. The only thing left from that teddy bear is the plastic nose, and like a shred of fabric that teddy bear was dragged around to absolute, you know, until there was virtually nothing left except the plastic nose. It's in a box somewhere. I know it is because it always made me laugh whenever I'd come across it.
Nice little keepsake.
Exactly. It's too funny. You never know what's going to come up on here. Joe, this is great. It should be two fantastic days.
Yeah. Again, something for everybody. Again, the races look great. I think everyone here has done a really great job and very much looking forward to it.
You handicap anything? You got is there an opinion that's lurking in there?
No, I'm a total hack. There's, I haven't really looked entirely too much. Been a little crazy, but you know, again, I'm sure it's going to be a great day of racing over the next 2 days.
Well, the players are going to have to. You're going to have to really budget and figure out how you want to apply your bankroll between the $5 doubles. I mean, if you've got a strong opinion on either end, that could prove out to be a nice way to approach the 2 day pick four, the 2 day pick six. Or actually, just the pick six now, because the 2 day pick four was going to be today and tomorrow.
Yep, that's canceled.
So cross that out. That was the Friday races were the Acorn and the Gold Cup, so that goes away. But everything else is intact, and don't forget about, if you're a turf player, don't forget about the $3 turf pick threes that incorporate the last three turf races of the day. And there we go.
Yeah, we only have the three graded stake. The three stakes on Saturday are the only turf races. So,
oh, look at that. That's a good point. Yeah, at least on the late part of the card, there is the early double Saturday is grass, but
yeah, just in terms of the stakes, so keep that in mind.
Yep, that makes it easy to remember. And on Friday, it's the fourth with the Gold Cup and the Intercontinental.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
4, 10, 11 on Friday. Joe Longo, thank you so much.
Steve, thank you. We'll see you.
It's my pleasure. Joe Longo, everybody. And Joe, of course, a proud University of Arizona alum. In fact, Hammer was prompting me the other day. He said, I guess the registration opened already for symposium. Never too soon to register for a symposium. I love it. Joe Longo, everybody. And Joe, you know, he's one of those alums at Arizona that was had a career. He was already well on his way. He was in his late 20s, maybe 30, 31, was an accountant, and just said, I don't want to do that anymore, or I don't want to do it for the rest of my life, and loved the game, and decided at like age 30-something, told his wife, I want to go to University of Arizona and the racetrack program, and she supported it, and next thing you know, Joe, I mean, in his 30s, and he's not alone. I mean, talk about Steve May, who did the same thing. I mean, in fact, Steve May, somewhat famously, was driving, listen, when we were a 4-7 show and heard about the University of Arizona program on the show.
That's fantastic.
And changed the direction of his career.
I applaud anybody that can get out of their comfort zone. It's so easy to just get, well, this is, you know, where I'm at. This is my lot. I'm set, right? You know, to somebody to be able to do that, you know, at a later age. I mean, I'm 58. I think maybe I should go to the University of Arizona. Maybe I can become a racetrack executive.
that's a famous path. I mean,
but you need a high school diploma first?
Not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
That's not. I don't think that's a.
You know my story with that, right?
GED? Did you get a GED?
No, so when Joseph was an infant, he's 32 now, I'm looking, you know, you're a new parent, you have these ideals. I'm looking at him in the crib, Steve, and I go, you know what? I'm going to go and get my GED because someday if he doesn't want to finish, I could tell him I finished. I won't lie to him. You know, by your third kid, you're like, you do what I say, I'll put my foot in your butt, you know, but when you had the first one, you've got all these ideology, right? So went to Sewanee High School, did 2 weeks of the night courses, took the practice test, passed it. Wasn't very difficult. And then they said to me, okay, you got to go register to take the other test. I couldn't get in till August. I was in Saratoga in August. So long story short, I did the hard part. I never did it.
Well, there's still time. There's still time.
58.
What? Please, why not? There's plenty of people. You always this time of year, you always see, you know, older people. The woman my father married, Beverly. She went and got.
You bet a chance I go to maybe the Culinary Institute or something.
That's not at the. It's true. The way you're going, I mean, based on your Twitter feed.
You know what was in The Godfather? You could have been Senator Migliori, Governor Migliori. It just wasn't enough time.
you know, I knew Sonny and Fredo. Fredo.
That's great. How nice is this? We got the whole place to ourselves.
It's unbelievable, actually. Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And there has been. It's funny. I probably have had more of these experiences than anybody because. Whether it's Saratoga heat cancellations.
Yep.
Saratoga during pandemic, broadcasting from the track. I'm trying to think about other, if there's ever been another issue like this when I'm down here. I suppose not really. But I maybe, you know, when there's Triple Crowns and I come for 2 weeks.
Right.
And the week before, much like the week when we're at Churchill, the week before Derby Week, and I happen to love that. There's a certain pleasure in being at these in this place cavernous buildings, and being one of only a handful of people that are on the site. I don't know. Wake up the echoes. That's a Notre Dame thing, right?
Right.
It's got that feel to it.
Because I have the cottage on the backstretch, and even when we're at Aqueduct, get back over here in the evening, you know, get some dinner or takeout on the way, and then I like to walk after I eat. So I walk around here at night. It's like I own the place. I mean, I know the turf course, and I go look at different things and. There is a certain quality to it, and I call it, like, you can kind of feel the presence of the ghosts of racing past. The history of the place really jumps out at you, particularly in the evening when it's so quiet. And, you know, obviously everybody knows Ruffians buried under this flagpole, Timely Riders underneath the other flagpole. Time of New England flash there, Timely Rider.
Timely Rider. There's people that are concerned about the remodeling and the... The way the courses are going to be laid out about moving anything.
I don't believe that'll happen. I really don't. But I mean, I know that in the plans they're cognizant of that fact. You know, that's pretty much hallowed ground there.
Yes.
You want to laugh? So the first summer I'm working at the track, galloping horses, I got left behind with the second string of horses. I didn't get to go to Saratoga. I was in my room at Belmont here in August when Saratoga was the August place to be. And it was a really hot day. And, you know, you don't have air conditioning. And 14-year-old me had this great idea that I was going to go swimming in the infield. Fun, right? Steve, I got flip-flops, bathing suit, towel like I'm going to Jones Beach. I walked across the trailer track over there. Well, let me tell you, the goose poop and the water's just I was like so disappointed.
there's postcards. This is more Florida oriented, But there's postcards of Gulfstream with their infield lake,
yep.
The old Gulfstream. And I put it up now and then, you know, when I do Gulfstream selections, and I love the antique postcards. And I got my own, you know, it's funny, those are pictures off the internet, but I've got a collection of sports stadiums and racetrack vintage postcards.
That's cool.
This summer I'll show them to you. And the there's the one of horses on the backstretch, and you can see the grandstand in the back, that long old Gulfstream grandstand that
yep.
never should have been torn down. And there's like sunfish boats in the infield. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think I've seen video of people with those paddle boats.
Yes,
in the infield lake.
Yeah, that absolutely you did. I remember that. You know, when I first got down to Florida, Hialeah still had the first eights. Gulfstream was the second eight. So I remember when we switched over to Gulfstream late March or middle of March, whatever it was. You know, going over to, you know, I'd have to walk horses after races and stuff as the apprentice in training. And I would look at, you know, walk around Gulfstream and look at it, and they had that one wall on the old Gulfstream that had all the Florida Derby winners. And I 2004, I won the Florida Derby on Friends Lake. And the first thing in my head, just like when I won the Wood Memorial as a kid, the picture's going to be on that wall on the third floor at Aqueduct that I used to study as a kid.
Sure.
Wow, I'm going to be on that wall. Yeah, they tore the place down. I never made the wall.
From what I understand, somebody talked about dumpsters of portraits and stuff just thrown out.
That's just a sin.
Well, this has been a problem. As a member, and I guess now they put me. I was on the air at Churchill during the Turf Writers and Broadcasters meeting, and they next thing I knew, I mean, Tom Law was with us, and Law said as he went to the meeting, I'm going to nominate you for a position, for a board position, whatever. Next thing I know, he comes back. I guess I got elected, but I have talked for several years with the Turf Writers and Broadcasters about having a historic preservation committee, because looking after things, and part of it is that the room I broadcast from at Pimlico, where I've got all the Jerry Fruchthoff photographs, and they're going to be looked after. It's already apparently Josh Pons is involved in this, and that new Maryland horse library that was opened, Cricket Goodall and all everybody. I mean, they're very conscious of that kind of thing there. And apparently in Laurel, there's a bunch of stuff too. So when the redevelopment happens, it's all got to be protected, because I understand there was stuff at Rockingham that was lost to time. I mean, this Atlantic City, I mean, there was concerns about what was going on in Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And I think it was, in fact, I think it was Joe Clancy put up that picture of from the racing office, the Atlantic City with all the records.
Okay.
At each distance.
Yeah.
A beautiful, and it'd be a fabulous thing to have, you know, at Monmouth or whatever.
Well, I'm glad that they tapped you to be on board with that, because you understand the significance and the importance of this kind of history and memorabilia. I went up to Rockingham. Dennis Bride, you know, and I go way back, and he wound up, when, you know, he was starting out training, wound up going to Rockingham with a string of horses, had a great meeting, and a few years after that, he wanted me to go ride a horse in the Father's Day Handicap, Packett's Landing. And we went there, and because Dennis, you know, he was the publisher, editor, writer for the Quarter Horse Racing Review, which was like their racing form. He wrote articles under like six different pen names. They were all him. He was the only staff. Right?
That's great.
So he knew everybody in the press department. So we got there early for the races that day, and he took me up into the press box at Rockingham. And much like Pimlico, like, you know, the walls are lined with pictures of great horses that had ridden there, you know, run there, Seabiscuit, you know, Arcaro was on the wall, all these people. And the sense, so the idea that stuff just disappeared is, you know,
it's troubling.
It is troubling. So I love the deep dives you go into when you're in that room at Pimlico, because you keep finding stuff. It's really amazing.
I did not have a great season. I don't know what it was, this particular year, but the week flew by, and I did not get as much next to nothing out that I usually do. And in fact, even yesterday, I'm losing track. I think it was yesterday. We had the anniversary the same day that Touch Gold won the Belmont and ending a Triple Crown bid, and it was also Point Givens, the anniversary of Point Givens' win, which was one of the most. His and Afleet Alex's
dominant
were just unbelievable. Point Givens, though, it was almost bittersweet because you realize to yourself if he had been healthy in that Derby, he probably breaks the Triple Crown schneid.
Well, and again, that underscores how difficult it is,
right?
Because you got to be good on all 3 days, and I mean, he was absolutely far and away the best 3-year-old of that crop. It just, you know, didn't work out.
I'm going to ask you a funny question about that, actually. And technically, you could say the same thing about Empire Maker. Granted, he only ran in the Derby and the Belmont, so you have no idea. But Frankel has maintained forever. Bobby had designs on the Triple Crown with him. I mean, had he been healthy in the Derby, I don't want to take away from Funny Side's accomplishment or Peace Rules because Empire Maker was third.
Sure.
In much the same way that Point Given, you know, was sixth. Was sixth or fourth? Sixth.
I think he was sixth, yeah.
But in a crazy pace, too. What is your opinion regarding him? And you can speak to whatever horse you want to use in this context. When people ask me, because I'll do an interview. In fact, I got something today. They'll say, well, who's your favorite horse of all time? And my stock answer for a long time was Point Given, because I was so excited when I saw him as a 2-year-old. I just was said, oh, my God, this is
the best horse. He was a monster.
Yeah, best horse of my. Well, one of the best things about, remember, was for the Travers was him. Because I was working at the barbecue and watching him come down the path,
right,
the bridle path through the backyard, and there aren't that many horses whose withers and hip, shoulder and neck and head are above everybody.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable watching him go down, and I don't think to this day I've seen a horse, you know, tower over, you know, everybody that was up against the fence and on, you know, just walking you know, to the paddock.
Yeah, I mean, he was just a physically imposing individual. You know who I often like compare him to, that and I don't think this horse ever gets, and maybe I'm wrong, gets the full credit he deserves, him and Risen Star.
Risen Star does get overlooked. He's, you know, Risen Star now is,
well,
you know,
88.
It goes back. I mean, exactly.
And, you know, I forget who rode him early. Local rider, Fairgrounds for Louis Roussel. And then they put Delahousie on him. I think Vasquez rode him once, but he had a commitment. But somebody like Sean LaViolette, or I can't remember exactly, to
I'll
be
look,
honest
I'll,
with you.
Oh, look. The question then, as I do that, the question I was going to ask you was when this conversation comes up with people who, you know the game, their knock on him is always that he didn't face Elders. He never faced Elders.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Is that the greatest knock?
Neither did Risen Star. I mean,
he got hurt.
But I mean, that's the point. I mean, I think they would have comported themselves very well with older horses. But you look back at the history of 3-year-olds facing older horses, usually it would happen in the fall of the year. Affirmed faced Seattle Slough. Seattle Slough was better. The next year, Affirmed faced Spectacular Bid. Affirmed was better. The next year, Spectacular Bid ran the table at 4. It's amazing, even though it's later in the year, how 3-year-olds still have a hard time at the upper level. Handling your best 4-year-olds usually beat your best 3-year-olds that time of year. I think when you think about American Pharoah, and I'm not saying that the older horses he faced were in the breadth of what the horses were just talking about,
right?
But he dominated them, so you got to give him high marks for for that. And you know, people, oh, he always got soft trips. He always, you know, yeah, guess what? He created his own trips.
No, that's one of my favorite things to just laugh about, because it's just a silly.
He created his own trips by being that good and that handy and that tactical and that responsive. You know, people underestimate, if you turn a horse on, not all horses turn off again.
Well, and you've explained that. This is an incomplete, you know, this is another thing that'll make you nuts, trying to pull up Risen Star's record, 8-11. B.J. Walker Jr.
Yeah, I thought there was someone else in between him and maybe Vasquez. I could be wrong.
Randy Romero.
Did Randy ride him too?
Five times.
Wow.
Five times.
No, it was Sean Romero. Wasn't Randy.
Oh, you're right. S.P. Romero.
Yeah,
you're absolutely
that's
right.
That's who it was. Sean Romero.
Sean
that's
Romero.
That's who I was trying to think of.
I'm looking at this because...
No, we got there. It just took us a moment.
Exactly. And you were right about Jacinto. Rode him as well. Rode him in what would have been had to be the Bluegrass.
Yeah. Yep.
Beat 49er.
Wow. I mean, that was some crap. I will say this, Steve. I was hurt. I wasn't riding. And I came out Belmont week. I was still in a neck brace. And I watched Risen Star blow out. Jimmy Nichols was on him. He went to like 3/8 and 33 and change. He came by here. He had to pull up a half and 45, like literally 2 or 3 days before the race. It was monstrous. His mouth was so wide open, you could have put a baby in his mouth. He just was like unbelievable how he blew out.
Well, that's an interesting record. Also, DJ Quinn rode him once.
I'm not familiar with that. Yeah,
this was at Louisiana Downs.
That might have been the setup.
And actually, it was before Louis got him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then singing Ronnie Lamarck.
Rene Jebbia? Jebbia?
Huh?
Rene Jebbia.
Wow.
Or Rene Jebbia.
Unusual. I don't know a name.
You know, I'm guessing. The reason I'm having trouble is it's not coming up as a PDF. It's all sort of hieroglyphic.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty crazy that you got to. If I had Champion's book,
I have one up in my office.
I've got four. I think I got four of them.
Yeah, all the updated ones.
Yes,
yeah.
And now the first one is now all marked up. I highlight stuff and I make notes
cool.
And when I utilize them. Speaking of making notes, here, take this. That's Saturday's.
Okay.
There you go.
There's my cheat sheet.
Yeah, there's your quick sheet. Now you're Rich. Rich Migliori uses quick sheets.
Can you do a commercial for this?
Exactly.
When I'm in a hurry getting ready for a broadcast,
I quick sheet it.
Petrice, he is trained other dimension here. I have a very hard time seeing past him in the Belmont. I'm going to use Angel of Empire. I'm going to use a little Arcangelo. And a little hit show, but those are my four. But everything is around Tappet Trice winning. If he wins, I'm going to have a really good day, and if he doesn't, I'm not.
I was part of that contingent who said back in February as he was coming around and emerging, oh, here's Todd's Belmont horse. But I sort of
you've cooled.
I have cool, just because, and you know, when I would write up the Express Bet Belmont wagering guide entry, I would always start with Todd's horses, and I kept updating, you know, Todd's success, and frankly, I use it to juxtapose the criticism that Todd takes about his Derby record, which is a preposterously stupid discussion, because literally. The first, 25 horses that Todd sent into the Derby had no business going past a mile and a 16th.
Sure.
And yet he got them to the Derby.
Right.
And so, I mean, there's literally 40% of the horses he's brought to the Derby. They only got there because of how good a job he does. And then things started to change, and he started to get horses that had classic distance pedigrees, and now he's won three. But what he's done in this race is just unbelievable. Because, in fact, who was it earlier this morning that talked about, you know, Woody Stevens-esque in terms of identifying horses that are going to excel at this trip and have styles? And, I mean, and then there's, you know, there's ones that I would have jumped on and thought were going to get there that fell short, like Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
Who ran a terrific race.
Yeah, he ran great.
He was a wonderful horse. He's also fun to... He's one of those horses that would put his tongue out and wanted you to pull on his tongue.
Yep.
It's the craziest thing. The horses play that game. But then there was also the one that really hurt. Was it Commissioner?
Yeah, he got beat a nose, right?
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable beat. So anyway, I mean, Todd could have won got another two or three of these.
Exactly. But that speaks volumes to me about Todd Pletcher's training regimen and the foundation he puts in horses over time. It's, you know, it doesn't happen, you know, just pointing for the Belmont. It starts when they're two, and the way he develops horses and the amount of miles that are put in, long, slow, steady gallop outs. I'm not one of those people that like try to identify a Belmont horse early in the season. I'm it's a little more organic for me than that. But watching this horse train is what's absolutely made me bullish about it. The way he worked beautifully, gets to the wire, and it's obvious the intention is to gallop out strong. Rider gives him a little nudge. His head drops 5 or 6 inches. He reaches out even further. And he just continues. I mean, he's pulling up on the backstretch.
And this is the right oval for him.
A horse that doesn't like kickback, but it's going to be more controlled, the kickback, because they don't go as fast. It just comes back harder the faster they go. Louis has plenty of time to figure out a path to get him in the clear, because he does his best running in the clear. He's going to get to save ground early because he's post two. He's got no choice, right? So then he can afford to give some away the second turn. Like I said, I'm bullish about him. I think it's a great card all the way through. You know, one thing we should say about Woody Stevens, and this is no reflection or knock, because everybody knows what a big Todd Pletcher fan I am, and I think the job he does is amazing. But when Woody was in the midst of that scheme, you had 42 horses at Belmont. That was maximum. Right. Woody didn't have another string anyplace else. That was out of 42 horses in his barn. That was in the day and age, Steve, when someone would go to Woody Stevens and he'd say, well, I'm full up, but this guy, and this guy have room, and they're all good horsemen. You might want to talk to them. And that's how horses got spread out amongst very capable horsemen that maybe weren't the marquee name at the moment, that horses would get spread. I remember my boss, you know, sending horses to other people because he was filled up, couldn't, you know, take on anymore, because it was 42, not 44, not 50, 42. And Saratoga reopened for training in 1980. And Steve did send an overflow of two-year-olds up there. Actually, my wife Carmela handled the two-year-olds up there that first spring they reopened. John Kimmel's assistant, Loretta, who I had known from Penmore Farm, her and Carmela met up there. She had horses, she was working, actually, I think, for Rick Violet, who had Angel Penna's spillover. He was the assistant up there. And they've been friends ever since then. So that was, reopening Saratoga for training was when people started more with the second division. And obviously Wayne Lucas changed the way the game was played in that respect. But Woody did it with 42 horses in his shed row every year. And you know what his big move was? And I remember talking to Phil Gleaves about this. He'd work his worst older horse with his best two-year-old. And if the best two-year-old could keep up with his worst older horse, he knew they were good.
Hmm.
I mean, that's just how different they are physically at that stage of the game.
There you go. Give us a... Go back to your reference point. What else... Who else figures in the conversation Saturday?
Well, I am very curious and interested... And rooting for, I'm trying to find him here, Casa Creed. Obviously, you know, Lee Einsiedler, he does so much
you know, with PDJF, and he's just such a generous person that enjoys the game so much. I'm really interested in seeing Casa Creed. I think Big Invasion, certainly a major player there. Obviously, Caravelle's your favorite. How about the Philly and Mayor race? Clarier and Search Results and Secret Oath. I mean, I like that Secret Oath and Clarier are hooking up again. I like rivalries. I think it helps capture people's imaginations. And, you know, obviously for me, Affirmed and Aladar was what I cut my teeth on. So, you know, maybe the greatest rivalry in the history of turf.
Georgie was here earlier.
I missed him.
He was here. And we didn't get a chance. I was knee-deep with Andy. Otherwise, I would have flagged George Velasquez.
Well, and had him. Andy would not have had none of that. No. If you want to talk to George, talk to George.
It's funny.
Give me a break.
He was on taking that direction with you.
That's why I left.
Unbelievable. I did get a request, though, if we're going to talk a quick history note.
Yeah.
Julie was on. Well, you listened to Julie.
Yes.
And you heard, did you hear the race call? Were you still in the car?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
So you heard the Antrim Road.
Yes, I was on Antrim Road, yeah. I guess I was in front for a while.
There you go.
I don't know, what kind of fractions did we set? I don't even remember.
I can't remember now either.
Was that for Wismer? Glenn Wismer, I think.
Is that right?
I think so.
I got to know Glenn and have him at Presque Isle with this nice
how
horse
old,
that he's
Steve?
Got.
I go back a ways.
It's true.
I actually broke that horse's maiden. Julie came to me and said, "You want to?"
Did she tell that story? Was that accurately portrayed?
It was. I didn't take her serious. I honestly don't think she really believed it, but it was a good selling point.
It made a good story.
Julie could. She was her own best agent. She was remarkable. I obviously very talented, but had the gift of gab to go with it. I've caught up.
You've had to. That's part of it.
No, see, when I was riding, I would say things to people that I still can't believe I said to people. I mean, Steve, between having to be 112 pounds and, you know, listen, I've been around horses my whole life, so people would say something to me about a horse that I just thought was dumb, and I would have to let them know I thought it was dumb. I couldn't bite my tongue. I actually had the audacity. I'm not going to say the guy's name. He's retired, but he was rather large. And something happened in Saratoga, and he was yelling at me. The horse got beat 20 lengths. I couldn't get him beat 20 lengths if I wanted to, right? And he starts telling me, "I don't know what kind of decisions you're making out there. What could you be thinking?" And I looked at him. I said, "You know, I got split seconds to make decisions out there." I said, "You got a lifetime to eat all them pies and cheeseburgers to look like that." Never rode for him again. That was it. I didn't burn that bridge. I blew it up. And then the best one, though, this actually
great.
Makes it all worth it. He had a really good filly the next year, and Drew Malika went back to work for me, and me and Drew always had this contentious relationship.
No.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And this was like round three of our relationship, and he didn't say anything to me, and the guy needed a rider in the Hempstead, and the filly was going to be like, mare was going to be like 3-1 in the Hempstead, which is now the Phipps. So he goes over to Aqueduct to talk to the trader, unbeknownst to me, and says, "Listen, you know, Mig sent me over. He really wants to ride that mare for you. I know you need a rider. Get out of my barn. I'll scratch her before I let him ride her." So he called me up. He said, "Hey, I went into the Lions. I didn't know you were going. You should have told me something." But now I get a kick out of it that he actually went into he put his head on the chopping block.
So, for those that, and actually, you know what? That's one person that always makes an appearance. Belmont
yeah.
week. I haven't seen Drew.
I'm sure you will. It's early. We got tomorrow.
Tomorrow maybe.
Yeah. Listen, give him a lot of credit. You talk about going back to school late in life to
yep.
go
yep.
and pass the bar.
Yep.
I mean, really. I mean, that's takes
yep.
a lot of courage and a lot yep. of intelligence. I mean, it's brilliant actually. But, listen, everybody, there's three sides to every story, right? You know, so Drew's side of the story makes me out to be more of the villain. My side of the story makes him more out to be the villain. At times, we were oil and water.
Yeah. Who else, out of curiosity, who else had your book over the years?
How much time you got left in the show?
How many? Well, because you had injuries too that would have sort of precipitated.
Switch. My first agent was Joe Shea, who had been Ron Turcotte's agent his whole career, and he was wonderful. He was brilliant. Joe was getting older, and then had some health issues, and I wound up with Maurice Farias. What were you laughing about? What?
Let's see.
Somebody texted you just now.
Yes. Lafitte in Monrovia writes, I asked Mig for an autograph when I was 10 years old, and he told me to piss off.
He knows that's not true. I'm always good with kids.
That's from Lafitte.
Yeah, he's making up a story. I love Lafitte, but that's...
What, he's never brought that up with
revisionist
you?
Revisionist history.
He's never brought this
There's
up with you.
There's no way I ever denied a kid.
Folks, well, you can't tune in today, and you might not even be able to bring that up tomorrow. Maybe next Thursday's show. This has got to be brought up.
I'm going to...
Oh, this is
absolutely
great.
Listen... When I was a kid, galloping horses at Par Meadows in the morning, working on the farm in the afternoon, then selling the quarter horse race review for Dennis Brider in the evening. Let's see. Yeah, now I know he's lying. First of all, Lafitte Pink Eye, the jockey, we have to qualify that because Lafitte, the broadcaster, has made his own name, and rightfully so. He's brilliant. Was one of my favorite riders because I always, obviously, the way he finished on horses, and I if I could have emulated anything from him was how he finished, obviously. Maybe the only rider I was ever intimidated by in the room. He was so unapproachable to me, and he was so stern and quiet
serious,
to himself.
Yeah.
And like even when I wanted to like go talk to him or say something, I was intimidated by him. I wouldn't. So... got friendlier with him, obviously, after the fact. I mean, we both went through something that I hope...
The neck, right? Neck
yeah,
and back.
The neck, yeah. People don't have to go through. I remember talking to him before they were going to take him out of the halo, and that's, as painful a thing as you're going to experience. So we had that conversation. How about... So Phil Linguidi, who's the white cap here, was one of the leading quarter horse jockeys at Par Meadows. And I'd be selling the paper out in front of the clubhouse, and the jocks would walk by there to go to the jocks room. And I'd be, Mr. Linguidi, I'm 12 years old. Can I get an autograph? Can I get an autograph? Or he'd want to read, hey, can I get a pair of goggles? I'm busy, kid. Not now. And I'm not making it up. He would just blow me off every night and strut on by. So years later, I've been giving him this guff for it ever since. 3 years ago, he brought me a pair of goggles in Saratoga. I can't hear it no more. Here's the guy. He's like, I don't want them now. I couldn't even get an autograph back in the day.
That is unbelievable.
He actually, though, Phil Linguidi won a thoroughbred race, a quarter horse race, and an Appaloosa race all in the same day.
Wow.
Maybe the only guy to ever do that, huh?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, because they have out in the West, they've got those... They do have those cards where they'll run
Knicks cards, yeah.
The paints and the Appaloosas, you name it, quarters, yeah. and thoroughbreds, the fares too. You'll get that.
Oh
stuff.
Yeah, and mules. And
I'll tell you who could probably. I'll tell you who's done this too. Are the Stevens boys. I bet you Scott and Gary have done
I got to ask
those.
Gary about that.
I showed Gary a postcard of some wackadoo crazy fairgrounds in Idaho, and he said, "I rode there."
Wow.
He said, I rode there.
Well, the best thing that, for me, Par Meadows went bankrupt, and they were asking the trainers to continue the cards going so that, and you'll get paid eventually. Well, ultimately, they didn't get paid, and then they had guys that were stranded there. They didn't have enough money to van home to Texas, Louisiana, New Mexico, wherever they came from.
Explain to people what we're talking about, this Par Meadows out.
Yeah, out the end of the Long Island Expressway at the time. It's actually extended a little further now, but it was like exit 72 on the expressway, I believe, at the time. And they started a quarter horse meet. Ronald Parr had this idea that people that would be going to the Hamptons for the weekend would go to the races, entertainment, and it never worked out. Obviously, quarter horse racing really didn't take off. But I worked out there for Dennis Brida. I worked for Bill George, had Lakeview Farms. We had a lot of quarter horses there. Howie Iffinger was out there, Mickey Wax.
Yeah, Pank.
Well, so they had match races horse for horse for guys to be able to, they would sell one to Sandy's Quarter Horse Farm and, you know, get enough money to go home. That's my first winner at Par Meadows.
Send me that. I'll put that on the list. Yeah,
that's Dennis Friday.
Oh, my God, that's hysterical.
Yeah, that's a horse named Raider, man. I was, 13 years old by then. And
oh, send that.
Yeah,
I'll send that. That's going up online. That's out of this world.
But, can I send this? What, turn on Wi-Fi? Why do I got to turn on the Wi-Fi?
Yeah, well, it helps. You don't have to, but it makes it easier.
All right, let's see if this works. Anyway, yeah, so, you know, got a lot of foundation out there working with horses. And Bill George was this great guy. He had a construction company in the Bronx. He bought this little farm at a half-mile track. And I remember talking to him. A lady named Sharon Miller said, you need to talk to this guy, start galloping horses. So I saw me win a pony race. So he gave me the number. I called him up, and he asked me if I ever galloped a racehorse. Oh, sure. I've never been on a racehorse in my life, right?
So typical of you.
Went out there, put me on a racehorse. But, Steve, I could see it. In my mind, like, I could see how they held their hands, how they took a cross, so I could do it.
Nice.
And of course, they put me on an easy horse. And I wish I knew everybody's name from back then. Like, I knew their first names. I knew their last names. That they were all so helpful and taught me so much. And just the nicest people. Left there and wound up at Belmont. But Mickey Wax would come out with Mary Bacon.
Oh, wow.
I had to go to... Par Meadows from the farm, which was a couple miles away, and they said, you ride with Mary. You had to qualify. Quarter horses have to qualify, break out of the gate and go 300 yards and whatever time it was, right? We pulled out of the drive, and Mary Bacon cut some guy off and then, like, proceeded. And you got to say, I'm a little kid. Cursing this guy out, pulled the car over, like, road rage, got out of the car, yelling the guy to get out. She's going to whip his butt. I'm sitting in the front seat scared to death. Baptism by fire.
Is the statute of limitations over on this? Is Mary going to hear from Mary on this?
No, unfortunately, Mary's
gone. Right, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
But I went to, I think we broke like 10 sets of horses out of the gate that morning and got them all qualified. And, you know, it's so funny. You have your favorites, horses you still remember from, you know, what, 40-some-odd years ago, almost 50 years ago?
Exactly.
No doubt. Showdown Dallas and obviously Raider Man, Superfine, Goldie Music McHugh, all these horses that, you know, these are horses I learned on.
Well, Tony, you talk to Tony. Tony pulls out, names, and it's unbelievable. I mean, between the two of you, you've got to have been on 50,000-plus horses. And yet, I've said this a million times, that professional athletes, golfers, hockey players, golfers will tell you every shot they've ever taken in a tournament. The hockey players can literally tell you about shifts that they took. It's bizarre. And it tells you what kind of mentality... And what kind of capacity that pros have in that element.
It's interesting because I can remember horses better than I can remember anything else, right? Races that I wish I had a do-over are the ones that stand out the most.
Well, sure, that's natural. Yeah. That's natural.
I rode a horse for Rick Violet in the Jim Dandy Free at Last or Free at Home. I forget his name exactly. And... he was doing great at the time, and Congaree was in the race, and he was the favorite. And I was right in behind Congaree. Gary was on Congaree. And he kept looking around for competition. And sometimes a superior horse, you can kind of pull the rug on them if you grab them quick, like especially if they're asleep, if they're relaxed, right? And I keep watching him, and his ears are up, and he's relaxed, and he's just going along easy in Saratoga, and Gary keeps looking, and I'm directly behind him. And just at the 3/8, I said, next time he looks around and he straightens up in the saddle, because he couldn't see me, I'm right behind him. I said, I'm going all in. I'm going to grab this horse by the throat and just like try to snatch the rug out from under him. And he looked around, and when he straightened up, I went, wow. And it turns out Congaree was no good that day anyway. He just had nothing, right? And I opened up like 4 or 5 by the 8th pole, and my horse hit the wall. If I had just sat... he got nailed by Scorpion.
Lucas.
And Jerry rode Scorpion, and you could see Jerry kind of almost gave up and was giving him that tap down the shoulder. And my horse started coming back to him. And then Jerry rode furiously and caught me. And I always wish I had that one back. Like, there was a thought process behind what I did. It turned out to be a big mistake. But the way I could live with it was I always felt like if I'm going to make a mistake, let it be an aggressive mistake, something at least I had a thought process behind.
Sure.
Than a passive kind of force-fed mistake, which to me, that's unforgiving when I watch races and I see a rider be dictated to. I don't like that, you know. I mean, that's you talk about greatness. Like, Lafitte Pink Eye was never going to be dictated to. Angel Cordero, never going to be dictated to. But, you know, guys like this, George Velasquez, you know, greats, they, you know, live and die by the sword on their terms.
Free of love.
Free of love. That's what it was. I can remember the race. I can remember the horse, his face. How about Rick had a really nice horse, Slew's Ghost. That finished, he wound up second in the hopeful that year. This horse could stand up on his hind legs and walk further than any horse I've ever been on in
given,
my life.
Point Given was point like given that. It was the scariest thing you ever saw in your life when he would go on his up on his
hind
legs.
What's interesting, though, when you're on one that has that kind of balance and they go straight up in the air like that, you don't feel like you're in jeopardy. You feel like you're on a giant couch
you stood up. You tuck up.
Yeah,
right,
grab some mane, lean into them, lean forward, and just bury your face in their mane. And, you know, those kind, you know, you get one like a flighty horse that'll go up in the air quick and they don't have their balance. They'll fall over. They'll lose their balance. When I was a kid, we had a horse named Morning Frolic. He was by Grey Dawn. Really good horse. One of those horses, Steve, would walk with his head perpetually bowed. Like, you didn't have to touch his mouth.
I love that.
And he'd walk out in front of the Breakfast at Hialeah crowd and just get past the wire, because we'd always stand out at the wire and then go up about our training. And he would hit his chin to his chest and he would grunt. He'd go, and stand straight up.
I don't know if I've told you the grunting, the snorting story.
Which?
Summer Bird. Before the Belmont.
Okay.
Around the walking ring. And there was a big crowd. I'd gotten very friendly with Tim Ice and his wife. And he came around and he had the neck bowed. And I had, up to that point, I had never heard a horse snort like that.
Right.
And I texted Tim. I said, he looks unbelievable. Tim texted back, going to win. And as Tina and I were going up the tunnel, I jumped her off into the toward the Belmont Cafe, and I said, go inside. I said, go bet Summerbird.
Wow.
And she did. We got a decent. He must have been eight or nine to one.
Yeah, I want to say he paid like $20.
In that range. That was.
Well, Morning Frolic.
I've never seen anything like that.
Tout himself like that. When he would do that, he was going to run his big race. And that was the first time I ever saw the wrath of Alan Jerkins. It came down to like the last day, and we had Morning Frolic, and he was like 20 to 1. And Chief had a horse in the race. And we were tied for leading trainer, Steve DeMauro and Alan Jerkins at Hialeah. And Morning Frolic beat their horse, was the favorite, and made us the leading stable. And we went to the test barn, and on the way back from the test barn, there's Chief kicking buckets and firing everything. And I had never seen that. I had played touch football with him. I never saw the wrath of Alan.
You mentioned Rick. For whatever reason, an unusual violet horse comes to mind. You made me think, and I wanted to look up. I was trying to remember if there was a race in particular at Saratoga. My friend, late friend Malcolm Soonis, he had one horse, Junior, in memoriam, and they had him over at the harness track, and Rick was always relegated to the harness track because he was a burr under the saddle.
He was the spokesperson for the
New York Thoroughbred Horseman. And so they would Rick was over. But actually, he never minded being over there because it's quiet. And it's nice. And right across the one of the last barns, and then right, Junior was here, and right across was Man from Wicklow.
And from Wicklow, nice horse. Yeah,
it's a nice horse.
Ran long turf.
Yeah, long on the turf. Yeah. That's the horse with Rick that I.
Rick had an owner that named horses all after honeymooner stuff. He had Mrs. Manicotti. He had drive the bus. He had all these horses named for stuff from the honeymooners.
Well, that's like a precursor to Al Gold and all yeah. the Odd Couple stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and he also trained. I'm going to forget the guy's name now. Harvey.
Which Harvey?
Oh, gosh. He had so many good horses. He passed away. Harvey Clark, is it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Harvey Clark, of course.
Yeah, Harvey Clark. He trained for Harvey Clark in the beginning. I had some nice horses. So it was Memorial Day, 1988, and I'm supposed to go to Maryland on Monday for Rick to ride a filly in the stake for Harvey. I think it was Reading Ridge. And then the next day they had another stake, and I'm supposed to ride another horse for him the next day in the stake. And last minute I pick up a mount in the Met Mile. So Vic Gilardi had my book, and he calls Rick, and he said, Rick, listen, we could ride the Met Mile, and I got some other mounts here. Would you let me off? And we're like, all right, if you can get me a good rider. So he got him Donnie Miller. Reading Ridge won the stake. And, of course, the first race that day, I went out and I broke my neck. That was the first time they did the Rescue 911 on it. It's on YouTube, Iron Jockey, all that. And then the horse that Rick ran the next day, Bricelli picked up, and he won by like 8 on the grass. So I'm in the hospital. The first 8 or 9 days, I was in intensive care. Nobody could see me. And then I was allowed visitors after I got out of surgery and everything. Rick comes, the first thing out of his mouth, if you'd have just come and rode my horses.
No!
I don't need any of this.
That's the racetrack.
Well, Eddie Maple came in to see me, and Eddie never had a filter. Eddie just said what was on his mind. And
That's still true.
Yeah, and he goes, he didn't say it to me, he just said it in general. He's, wow, man, he's really messed up.
Oh my God, that's funny, Rich. I'm gonna let me also. You might as well hang around for these last 20 minutes because you may also know another jock agent that's here, and that's Jeff Franklin.
I know Jeff Franklin, but he never worked for me. That's one guy I didn't do the hatchet job on. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Meg, and you know, Steve, I have a question. What did I ever do wrong to you?
Why?
Well, I mean, you put me on after Meek Maori, who probably is the most interesting person, you know, in North America. And it's like nothing I can say or do is worthy. Why don't I just hang up and just let him talk for the next 20 minutes and, you know, we can all have fun.
He's going to talk on Monday, so it doesn't matter.
All right.
I need to kind of go because I want to go take my granddaughter for a walk.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to leave you guys.
Perfect.
Jeff, I look forward to seeing you. I don't get to see you often enough, and I love anybody that can reinvent themselves and be good and proficient at so many different things, and you certainly fit that bill, as does Steve.
Okay. Keep him on for 20 more minutes, please. I gotta go. All right. See you, mate.
Take care now.
There goes Rich. All right. We're going to do our conversation, and you're going to see the picture for today's listing. You're going to see the picture of Mig on that, and Dennis Brida. You're going to get a biggest kick out of it. Unbelievable. That was really fun, and I actually had a couple of other things, but there was no way I was pulling Mig up. And we have just enough time, I think, Jeff, to get everybody set for the weekend. We're going to look at the Woody Stevens and the Metropolitan, but we got a couple of announcements, and we got to thank everybody for hanging in for those 3 days while the website was on the side of the road waiting for emergency services.
Yeah, Steve. Unfortunately, the Thorographs offsite web hosting facility crashed, and it took the engineers, oh my gosh, 3-4 days to bring everything back up. And there's even like a band of data that was apparently irretrievably lost. So when folks want, if you're not getting the usual Wednesday night, Thursday morning, two races from at the races. Go back to thoroughgraph.com, just enter your email again, and you'll start to get them. In fact, you'll get it immediately. If you haven't gotten it this morning, you can get it within 20 seconds now just by putting your email in. And I know Jerry, gosh, he just feels terrible. So he put up his seminar, which is, you know, like the most popular thing he does in the year. It's on the site for free. And covering the Belmont Stakes and a number of the supporting stakes. And, wow. So it's been a rocky week, you know. And, you know, it must be Season of the Witch, right? I mean, you guys are going through what we go through with air quality issues out here in the West Coast. And things crashing, so we're all doing our best. It's going to be a great weekend, though. I get a feeling.
It will. It's fine. It's the way, in fact, Jerry did those three races, and we're going to do races 8 and 10. The only race in the pick 6 that that is not going to be covered right now and with Jerry is the Jiper, which is certainly a tough spot, but we discussed it with Andy Serling earlier. Between Jerry's three races and what we're going to discuss right now, I think you might have a nice handle on 5 of the 6 races. On Saturday. Let's talk about the Woody. And, you know, here's the 7-furlong standard that is now a grade one. I think people maybe have forgotten this was the Riva Ridge for years and years. They put Woody's name on it, and it became a grade one. kind of funny. This is really interesting, and it may be as good an example of what Thoroughgraph does for players as any race we talk about.
I think both races you chose are very significant for Thoroughgraph players. And so the story of the Woody Stevens is so fascinating to me is Arabian Lion. Usually we crave to bet against horses like Arabian Lion who have advanced so quickly. And everybody, even if you're not a Chiefs player, you've heard the term bounce, you know, will regress after putting out an effort. There are a couple things that argue against Arabian Lion bouncing. And going in, he's got inarguably the fastest Thoroughgraph numbers in the race, weight adjusted. Last two races are brilliant. One is Baffert has a history, or had a history in the old days, of taking horses to New York, and they would catapult to new tops, 3 to 5 point moves. And so it's hard to imagine the Arabian Lion is going to move to like -2 or -3 territory. Well, if he does, he'll win by a block. But what's really interesting is that he ran to his 2-year-old top as a mid-3-year-old. And we've talked about this on the show over these last several weeks. 3-year-olds tend to sustain their form. It's much, much more difficult to project a bounce this time of year for a 3-year-old. They are the equivalent of a human 18-year-old, sturdy, you know, hey, bring it on, baby. Let me see what you got. So unfortunately, for the guys who like to bet against the bouncers, I can't tell you that Arabian Lion's going to do that. He could, sure. But, you know, statistically, it's a bad risk. To bet against them with confidence. And all that said, I do think there are a couple of what I would think are emerging horses. A Federal Judge, I don't know what to make of Federal Judge. I've watched him, and he's only got the 2 starts, ran very, very quickly in his first start, slightly regressed in the second, but any kind of return to the first start and even a slight move forward puts him in the picture. I'm a real Flavian Pratt fan to make matters even more interesting. And then my third horse that I'm watching in the race before I turn the mic over to you is an unproven horse called New York Thunder. I don't know what to make of him. You know, synthetic tracks, et cetera. He's never established a level. And these are the kind of horses that sometimes have a little bit more in the tank and surprise everybody. And afterward, you go, wow. You know, where did he make their 4-point move? Well, he's never really regressed and, you know, got some time to recover from prior efforts. So that's how I see the race, those 3. How about you?
Well, it's funny you mentioned New York Thunder, who's got the rail. and a horse that has some similarities to him, who is already proven on dirt and who is going to be overlooked in here, but who's competitive on number power, is Drew's Gold, the Jim Chapman Violence Ridgeling that is coming off another win in the Gold Fever, and this must be the most unknown, undefeated horse in the country.
Yeah, yeah. And, and I'm using my own argument against me. He's never established a level. His dam is a very effective router. And, last I looked, he's 4 for 4. And so I guess I'm kind of a moron for not having thrown him in as a fourth horse. Of course he could win. But I don't know, something in my gut said 7/8. I don't know. I'm not trusting it for some reason, and yet I can't articulate exactly why that is. But as from a sheer sheets perspective, you have to include them, of course.
Well, and the other reason that the figs that can help is because it might help you differentiate about being. I don't want to say against certain horses, but for instance, General Jim is going to have to run a new top to win this. And he's going to be, he's going to be short. Let's be honest. Price-wise, 7-2. In fact, I didn't realize that David made him the morning line favorite. I don't think he'll go favorite. I think Arabian Lion will. But he's going to be no worse than second choice, I suppose. But he's going to have to make up 3 or 4 lengths to win this.
You're right. And, of course, the race would appear to set up for him. It appears to be a ton of speed. He's got a style, I can make the case for him, but, for sheep players, he's also carrying 124 pounds. So, that's like a point and change that you have to add on to his previous numbers. He's going to have to move forward to win. So I'm with you. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him hit the trifecta, but I'm not going to be betting him in the top 2 slots.
You know, the horse that is getting plenty of conversation, that on number power appears to be slow, or let's say slower than the top players, is Fort Bragg, putting on the blinkers for Baffert and returning to the Baffert fold after the 3 starts for Yak Team, including the good try in the Pat Day Mile. Fort Bragg feels like kind of a wise guy play in this race. And I'm hearing there's too many smart people mentioning him. You're looking at 5-1, so he's not he's not a secret per se. But I guess in his favor, getting back to the 5 and getting back to his top, if he's going to go forward, there is a case to be made that today's the day.
You're right. He's also a physical specimen, and as we mentioned earlier, Bob's horses historically, he's been a while since he really was running the same numbers, back there. They would sometimes go to 3 to 4 point tops, and you throw that on there, and then he's in the picture. So it's a fascinating race for sure. And I've always been I've always admired 7-furlong races as kind of like the breakfast champions every week. It's a tough race, man. Mm-hmm. And when you go by the barn the next morning and you see a horse come out of a 7/8 race, they are beat. I'd rather see him come out of a 1.25-mile race than a 7/8. It's just like intensity, So. A lot of interesting choices in the Woody Stevens for sure.
Well, let's turn to the Metropolitan, one of the great races in the sport. I don't care from Memorial Day fans that loved it on that spot and as a standalone, or now that it's a fixture on this undercard. It's always important. It always draws significant horses. No exception here. And you do have a horse on the rail that, if he runs to his top figs, should be hard to beat.
Yeah, and it's such a feel-good story and everything. But this is a fascinating race for competitive reasons. We have 6 horses who have run minus numbers on Thoroughgraph. That's like trying to separate, you know, Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, these are studs. These are really fast horses. And we, so how are we going to make any, I mean, two lengths may separate them. And it's going to be, I think, a trip race. You know, with Cody's Wish on the rail, this could be problematic. You never know what's going to go on down there. And I have a strange viewpoint on this race. How can I get value? And the two things that reached, that kind of screamed out at me were trainer changes. So Doppelganger and White Abario. So the former, ever since Brittany's had him, he's emerged as a brand new racehorse. He's only a couple lengths away from these. If he continues to improve, I might have a trifecta horse who's 20-1 on the line. And then White Abario, now the Dutro's got him. You know, he's run a -2 before. That's basically as fast as Cody's Wish. And, you know, over the years, it's been my observation, too many people try to say, well, when a horse goes from barn A to a barn B, the natural tendency is to say, well, trainer A is better than trainer B, and they tend to either add or subtract mental lengths. What I've learned is that training regimen changes can take, can turn horses around. And sometimes a quote-unquote not as well-known trainer can take over a horse and turn them around just because the regimen changes, a different group, you know, a little bit less or more daily training, different exercise rider in the morning. So my way of looking at this race is to try to get one of those two horses in the trifecta with, as I said before, some stud horses. And I mean, like, what about Charger? What happened? What do you do with him? Like in the Dwyer last year, that was like incredible what he did. So that's the only way I can play the race, Steve. And I'm sorry, you know, please don't shoot me, but I'm going to be looking for value with those two horses. And I know it's probably, I'm going to get a lot of emails on that. Like, you know, I've lost my mind.
Well, I'm interested as well in trying to find either horses to use in association with Cody's Wish. We have a few questions to answer that haven't come up yet. I mean, if you're going to talk about isolated tops and you know, numbers that make a horse competitive in a field, this Repo Rocks situation has to be discussed, and the Toboggan effort, and then the Westchester. You know, Jamie Ness, I understand all the complaints and all the, you know, the obvious consternation. This horse is running Saturday in this race, so, you know, make whatever determination you want to do about Ness, but you have to make a decision about, you might not like it, if you're of a certain opinion, but he's in this race and he very much can win. So he's, you know, he's a problem. Zandon, to me, this is a huge opportunity for him. And don't think for a second that Chad Brown doesn't understand, you know, these kinds of situations as well or better than most. Second off the layoff for him feels like a step forward, and he's going to need it. And then there's one of my favorite horsemen in the country that nobody really knows, unless you're, you know, a serious West Coast habitué, and that's Dr. Scheibel and Mark Glatt. Wherever Mark Glatt was going to run this horse, he was going to be on my tickets, because Glatt is just as good as we've got anywhere. So those are the three horses.
Plus, Dr. Scheibel, you know, is going to be the controlling pace, and, you know, as a West Coast horse coming eastward, so you could easily see him opening up three lengths before a 16th of a mile's over. And
if he gets a lead uncontested, he's going to wire this field.
Who could argue? That's the point. This is really a great group of horses. I am going to take issue, though, with Repo Rocks. I realize the old Jamie Ness factor, et cetera. I think that -3 that he ran last time is going to take its toll. He did it previously, bounced thereafter. I'm not going to be throwing him in the top two. We're going to see him. We're going to see him non-competitive.
Well, and you might very well be right. I'm just saying that if you're looking on straight number power and negative figures that are competitive with Cody's wish, I don't disagree with your concept when it comes to doppelganger and certainly the effort in the Carter. I think I put him fourth in the Carter, but I didn't use him in the multis, and I don't think it mattered. But I had at least an inkling. I think this is a bigger ask. Obviously, I would much rather a 10-1 build around Dr. Scheibel, personally. But listen, Cody's Wish is the horse to beat. He does have the rail, which, you know, can be problematic. He's never been down inside more. I guess that race at Churchill in November of 21, he was in the two hole. But so it's a little bit of an unknown factor. We'll see how Alvarado may just gain a little position and then, you know, have an inside out trip. I mean, that would figure. So it's the Metropolitan Handicap, the Met Mile, one of the great races of the year. We've got to pull out and send everybody out, I was going to say, into the race day, which is largely canceled. But that's all right. Jeff, again, everybody, Jerry Brown's analysis of the Phipps, the Manhattan, and the Belmont are up at the website. You got these two races. Even if you only heard parts of this, if you sign up, you'll get these two races sent to you with the sheet. So you've got all kinds of help in five of the six races that make up Saturday's $1 pick six. Jeff, we'll do some recapping next week. Good luck.
Yes, sir. Yes, and to everybody, fingers crossed for clean air and clean trips.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That was all right. Yeah, that
was very good. Hey,
okay.
Now.
See you, Steve.
See you, Jeff. Crafty Jeff Franklin, everybody. There's the show, and I want to thank Jeff and Mig with a really fun visit. We had Joe Longo to go through all the actually head spinning list of wagers. Pat McKenna, who helped us with the decision on the cancellation, and Dave Grenning has been on every day this week, I think, and Andy Serling. If you missed Andy's segment, it'll be up at the website. We handicapped all the stakes together with Andy, and he and Sarah El Dwabi will be up. We'll be doing the Talking Horses story tomorrow. We'll be doing Twin Spires weekend preview at the races here. Hammer and Jimmy and Nick and so much more. Talk to you tomorrow morning. If you missed anything, 6 to 9 replay here on SiriusXM, archive podcast, etc. in a little bit. Thanks, everybody. Good luck. If you find some place to play, I'm just kidding. There's plenty of places to play. I'll talk to you in the morning.
XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's group.